Text-to-image AI tools are taking the internet by storm, but is it art, or is it the end of art? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino. Images created by artificial intelligence programs like Stable Diffusion or DALL-E are everywhere now, dazzling users with their ability to instantly create any image you could dream up. The AI works by scraping billions of images from the internet, images often created by artists who may not be thrilled their life's work is helping build technology that could threaten their livelihood. Steven Zapata is a professional designer, illustrator, and art teacher in New York City who has big concerns about what this means.
My main concern is the precedent that we would be setting here by allowing these systems to scrape the creative labor of millions of people off of the internet and to train models that then go on to compete with the people that they trained off of in their very same creative markets. If we were to decide collectively that is somehow okay and legal and ethical, that basically leaves open this giant legal loophole that will allow this to happen again and again in every market that these systems come to. It doesn't make sense to allow any startup machine learning company to have carte blanche to use all the creative work that people have shared online to make models that will compete directly against those very same people.
Are artists actually allowing this? I mean, is there any consent given? Is there any option to opt out?
In the current models, no. There was no consent. No consent was asked for, no credit has been given, and no compensation has been given. As things have moved along here, products like Stable Diffusion have said that they will allow opting out of future models. But at the initial launch, they snuck it in under the wire. We didn't really understand what was going on until after the products had come to market. And these systems really should be opt-in from the beginning.
Under current conditions, do artists have any legal recourse here?
Currently, there are no sort of easy legal grooves for this, and that's because this is cutting-edge stuff, and we have to admit that a lot of the questions that are being raised here are occurring within a series of legal gray areas, and it's extremely complicated. Almost every question that you could ask, like, is it copyright infringement? Do the systems duplicate training data? Is this kind of use authorized under fair use? If it is fair use, is it fair use in the US? Is it fair use in the UK? You know, things change from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So it's extremely complicated, but it is going to have its day in court. You know, we've had recent developments. There's a class action lawsuit in the US on behalf of artists to look for some sort of legal recourse. And in the UK recently, Getty Images has announced that they are bringing a suit against Stability AI, the makers of Stable Diffusion, for training their systems off of the copyrighted work of Shutterstock and its users.
There's, of course, an argument that all art is referential, is, you know, building on or kind of in dialogue with other work that's been done before. What's different about how this AI is operating?
It's extremely different by my estimations. For example, I can imagine that when I share my work online, if I were to inspire another artist, in some cynical viewpoint, I could interpret their inspiration to make work like mine or to achieve my skill level as them rushing to compete with me in the market. But the difference when you're having that sort of distant interaction with another human being is that I know what is waiting for them on the journey. You know, I know that learning those skills and trying to reach my level is sort of worth it on its own. It's going to make their life better. No matter what happens, they're going to appreciate the attempt and they're going to sort of experience the self-affirming journey of art making. And even if they did then come up and sort of meet me on my level in the market where they could potentially take jobs from me or something like that, for someone in my position, everyone who would meet me on that level, I'm happy to see them. I'm like, I know how hard this has been for you and I want you to succeed. And that is just not something that is happening with these machines. These machines are, they're devoid of experience. There is no joy being felt. There is no ennobling factor of being on a journey. They are simply outputting. We're sort of outsourcing one of life's great pleasures and work that we really like doing. And really, with art really becomes an existential buoy, right? We're outsourcing that to something that isn't feeling all of the benefits, isn't enjoying any of it. And I think that to make this sort of false equivalence between what they are doing and what we are doing reduces what humans do with art to a sort of very sad grotesquerie that doesn't map to the personal experiences of most of the artists that I know.
Not all artists are having the same kind of negative reaction to this. I've seen some, you know, saying maybe this could be a tool that we can incorporate into our own creative process. I mean, do you think that there's any way that artists themselves could harness some of the power of this technology for their own use?
When it comes to any individual artist, can choose to use these systems however way they want. And for people who have artistic experience, a lot of them are sort of used to making sure that they are in control of their process and not the other way around. So for them, it'll be very easy to sort of decide where the machine is taking too much, and now here's the part where they can sort of cut it off at the pass and leave room for them to have some fun. Artists are very crafty, you know, they're very creative, and they're always going to be able to engage their creativity to sort of manage the process like that. But the point that I want to make here is that every good or noble thing that we can imagine doing with these systems is possible with the ethical version of these systems. All of the hopes that it will democratize things, the hopes that it will allow people who otherwise wouldn't have been creative to engage creativity, the hopes of increasing the accessibility to art, everything, every utopian and noble thing that we might say or dream about these systems, every single one of them can be said and equally applied to an ethical version of these systems rather than the unethical version.
What would an ethical system look like to you?
It looks like a system that is built on public domain and Creative Commons work. And on top of that, also artwork that is voluntarily provided to the companies that are training the systems. If all of those things could be honored and integrated well, and a system could be made that wasn't impinging on the rights of right holders and wasn't stepping on people in the market and unfairly using, you know, their names to generate derivative works, then I see no reason why artists shouldn't be allowed to engage this technology. And the possibilities sound very exciting.
Steven Zapata is a professional designer, illustrator, and art teacher. And now for some related links. We'll have Steven Zapata's video essay, The End of Art, at our website, marketplacetech.org. He elaborates on many of the arguments we discussed, but bonus, he does it while sketching. And as Steven mentioned, there has been some big legal news in the past couple of weeks. Three artists filed a class action lawsuit against Stability AI, that's the one that makes Stable Diffusion, as well as another AI company, Midjourney, and the online art portfolio platform, DeviantArt. They say the companies have violated the copyrights of millions of artists by scraping their images without their consent. We've got more details from The Verge at our website. And if you're wondering whether your work or even images of you have ended up in these AI training data sets, there's a website for that. It's haveibeentrained.com. Of course, we'll have a link for that too. It's all at our website, marketplacetech.org. And before we go, we'd like to ask for a bit of your help. We are exploring some of the interesting tech jobs that people might not know. We want to talk to some of the folks doing those jobs now or looking into them. If you have suggestions or know anyone who might tell an interesting story, email us at mptech, all one word, at marketplace.org. Rosie Hughes produced this episode. Jesus Alvarado and Daniel Shin also produce our show. Lydia Morrell is our intern. Brian Allison is our engineer. Amanda Peacher is the interim senior producer. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.